Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back to another news cycle week. Of course, we're going to have lots of news that's not going anywhere, but I will get into some of it. But we definitely want to get back into the militia. We covered a lot of the militia in the last show. So this show, we're going to get back into it. And actually, we're going to get into a dialogue in the Virginia ratification debates where questions are asked and then questions are answered as they get some real clarification on the necessity of the militia as a part of our constitutional republic. And that's why it is really important to understand how we are not even configured the way we are supposed to be, and they never amended the Constitution to change that. In other words, we're in violation of the Constitution regarding the militia and how we're supposed to be defending ourselves and so forth. So anyway, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that will give you the constitutional perspective. The interesting thing is, and what's really unique about this show and what is unique about the information I give you is I really base everything, almost everything, on the ratification debates. Why is this important? Because the Constitution's a compact. It is a contract written for and by the states, as you understand this. When they defined something during the ratification process, those definitions, those explanations, those descriptions and or identifiers, those are all legally binding definitions. In other words, that's how it has to be, because that's how they perceived it, and that's exactly how they moved forward. Now, as we moved forward from that point, as new people came into the positions of power and became legislators, presidents, and Supreme Court jurists, they decided to make changes, but they failed to follow the contractual process. The only process that is, and it's actually in the Constitution itself, it's in the contract, the only process of making any types of changes is via the Article 5 process. They have to amend the Constitution if they want to change the militia portions of the Constitution. They cannot use regulations, statutes, acts, or any other process. They have to follow the Article 5 process. That was clearly stipulated. That's why it's in the instrument or the contract itself. And that's why when they made some minor changes, some tweaks to the Electoral College in electing the president, they amended the Constitution. They didn't use statutes. They didn't come up with some regulations or some act to say, oh, this is what we're going to do. They followed the Constitution. They set the example. They created a contract and they lived by it. And the states are the stakeholders of the contract. The general government is not a stakeholder. And they're the ones that have been violating the state's contract. So that's why understanding the militia and how it's supposed to be used, because technically Trump should be calling up the militia to stopping this invasion. He already has a national force, or he should have, but they have neglected it and it has gone by the wayside. The smartest thing Trump could do is he could actually start going to Congress and saying, hey, all of this money needs to be going out to the militia. We need all of this money to start training and equipping the militia in every state. And there goes this concept of a National Guard. There goes this concept of a standing army. Now, we have to have a standing army if we have a military, or we have to have an army or military if we have military threats. And we do have military threats, but those are for matters external to the Republic. Our national defense within the Republic is not via the Army. It is via the militia. So let me kind of move forward. We will get into the militia, like I said today, but the number to call in is 215-867-8255. Or for those who need it in a simpler form, 215-TOP-TALK, T-O-P-T-L-T-A-L-K. I guess I can't spell today. Well, you know me, I have problems with names, words, what have you. Anyway, forgive me. I do need to grovel. If you would like to help, if you want to assist, please just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Those of you who do send emails, I do respond back, and I will help you or get engaged however you would like us to. I don't want to necessarily, and I don't until I get permission for the calling out or having, you know, because I'd love to have any of these folks coming on the show so that we can actually discuss what they're doing and how we can help them or how we've been helping them and how it's working and so forth. Because I think that that is ground intelligence in letting you know that things are actually happening. I don't want to be the only mouthpiece for things that are happening. However, I will do that because I'm not here to call people out. I'm not here to put pressure on, because I understand it's not the easiest thing to, you know, come out and speak, you know, in front of a microphone with lots of people listening. There's lots of people that have stage fright or whatever you want to call that. I remember there was a Seinfeld episode that the number one fear of, you know, a person would rather die than get up and do public speaking. And he made some pretty good analysis. Well, apparently the fear of public speaking is no longer the number one fear. Apparently, I think fear of being killed by terrorists has overcome that. But those things change year to year. But anywho, let me move forward. If you'd like to support us directly, we will and magnanimously and graciously and humbly accept any financial support you're willing to give us. We're only looking, currently, I'm only looking for money at this point to help cover the cost of travel. We've got a travel trip that's coming up in May. We've got to be out there in Wyoming, and we're hoping that we can get a little bit of support. I would appreciate it. Thank you so much for considering. The other thing you can do is you can join the Constitution Club if you go to constitutionclub.ning.com and get involved with Keith Broders and that organization in sending emails. He has scripts and so forth that are out there that you can actually get engaged in. The good cause of trying to repeal the 17th Amendment, as well as trying to do some other really good things in educating people. And he has some great educational videos and material and so forth. So get involved. There's many ways. And I will tell you this. You need to get involved with the party, the Republican Party. I hate to put the Republican Party over all of these other parties. Hopefully they're all supporting the Constitution. Well, except for one. One historically has been doing everything to undermine the Constitution. That's the Labor Party, or in America we call it the Democratic Party. But if you want to really help make change, you have to get the parties to start focusing on the Constitution and getting the Republican Party, because it's the big dog. It is the one that is the employer of most, well, it's the employer of the conservative side. There's very few libertarians and Constitutional Party employees out there, but nonetheless, if you get involved with the Republican Party, then you have a great opportunity to help steer them towards the Constitution and focusing on compliance to the Constitution. That's the secret. That's the key word. Say it with me. Compliance. We need to get the federal government, first and foremost, complying to the Constitution, then we need to get the states to do the same. I want to thank you before I run out of time. Thank you for tuning in. And I especially want to thank you for getting people to listen. Getting more and more people tuned into this message will help this message grow and get more and more people behind this concept of compliance. Now, I did go through the news, and there are some things that I will kind of dive into today before we get into the militia, but there is no sign, and if you're expecting to, you know, the federal government to finally shed all of these unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers, I think you're dreaming. But I check every day so I can report it. Hey, looks like they're going to actually disband the Department of Education. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. But that being said, I will keep you attuned if it does happen because I do scan the news every day. And so let me kind of dive forward and let me ask one question before we go to hard break. How many of you this weekend or after my last show went to the PlannersNetwork.org? If you have not gone there, it's not hard to remember, PlannersNetwork.org. Or just Google or DuckDuckGo. We DuckDuckGo now. So just DuckDuckGo, PlannersNetwork.org. And go look at what these folks are doing and how they have no unabashed zeal in trying to take over and subjugate all of America. When we get back, we'll be talking about Oso, the communist, and a few other things, and then we'll be diving into the militia. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so I can't make some of this stuff up, right? I mean, when it comes forth out of the mouth of a communist, I'm only repeating the message, right? So Oso the communist is out there almost pontificating, acting like a religious zealot. And this is the state religion. You need to understand that the secular, godless church that the federal government has instituted And if you want evidence of this, if you read Milton Friedman's Free to Choose, he's the one that kind of, you know, dances on the line really quickly by saying that the federal government has violated the Establishment Clause by using the education system in teaching its godless secular doctrine and enforcing that so that you cannot teach any alternate types of doctrine. If you want to sit down and write the doctrines of Christianity, you will find in an, you know, put, have two columns. Here's the Christian doctrines. You will find that they're teaching in the education system the antithesis and or contrary doctrines to Christianity in our education system. So don't tell me that they haven't established a religion, and don't tell me that they don't have a Sunday school, except they call it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school. Anyway, Oso the communist is now out telling young people that they have to ask themselves a legitimate question. And I'm quote unquote legitimate question. And she basically is asserting that in the wake of climate change and mounting student debt from their loans, from student loans, all this debt that they have, is it okay to still have children? That's like a moral type of question based on their moral values. And it's actually moral turpitude. But I can't believe that. Well, I can, because that's exactly what a communist will do. If you don't recognize the evil and insidiousness of these people and what they're trying to do, it is it's not a good path that we're on. I'll just say that. So let me move forward a little bit more. And if you hadn't heard, and this is why we have a military. This is why we have a requirement for the federal government to provide national security from external threats. We have a militia that depends upon each state to contribute and be a part of our internal squelling or squelching of any type of insurrections, rebellions, and so forth, as we understand the militia. But the military and the external national safety and security is a constitutional responsibility. And if you haven't heard, Iran has successfully launched a cruise, at least they claim that they have successfully launched a cruise missile from a submarine during some military drills in the Strait of Hormuz this weekend. So I'm not sure if you understand the ramifications of this, but the evil hordes in Iran now have the ability to travel really close, undetected, and launch a cruise missile. Is that a problem with anybody? These are ideologue religious zealots who are jihadists, and they're gunning for two very specific types of people. They're gunning for Christians, and or I should say the nation that represents Christianity in the world, which would be America, and they also are haters of Israel, and I should say the if you want to call it the Jewish religion, but it's actually not. It's the Gospel of Israel, the Old Testament, or what have you. Because we've got to remember, the Jews are only 1/12 of Israel, and the doctrines that were brought forth, and it was out of the tribe of Levi, where the priesthood and the doctrines were. What do you want to say, prophesize, or, you know, when Moses actually was giving the Ten Commandments, he was not a Jew. He was, I believe, Aaron and him were of the tribe of Levi, but they were Israel, but I don't believe that they were Jews. Christ was a Jew. Anyway, let me get out of the religious mode here and let me just move forward. But I'm telling you that there's a good reason why we have a military, and we need to make absolute sure and absolute clarity here that we have to have rogue nations like North Korea, Iran, and all of these to understand that we do not tolerate them trying to rattle their sabers. I honestly believe that there's a problem afloat, and there's no doubt in my mind, Iran is a country that will strike first, and they don't care. They're out to do the devil's bidding. Anyway, I've got some good news for you, and I'm not sure, you know, how you're going to take this, but I think that this actually opens up a great opportunity for change. Judge Stephen Reinhardt, the liberal face of the Ninth Circuit Court, died last week. And so Trump now has an opening in making what I would say a minor change. I know that there's already another opening, but and I know that Harris and Feinswein had already offered some suggestions and are actually nominees for some of the federal court appellate replacements, and he actually ignored those, which they were not very happy with. But I'm glad that he ignored those. But he has a great opportunity to change the face of the Ninth Circuit Court, or the beginning of that. And so, because Reinhardt was the one that really drove the change, or I should say drove the LGBT agenda against Proposition 8, Proposition 22, and so forth. He was always driving legislation and unconstitutional rulings for decades. And it's about time that they get somebody in there that will actually recognize the limitations of the federal court, because they should have actually stated that the federal government has no enumerated powers regarding marriage, regarding any of these matters, and therefore they have no jurisdiction over these matters. I've been telling you this for over a year now. Anyway, I know that there was some racist slinging with Spike Lee and Trump this weekend. And, anybody that is myopic in trying to purport a very specific paradigm, they're obviously biased, which means that they're probably racist as well, because their bias is their race that they're trying. And Spike Lee has always been focused on race. So doesn't that make him racist? Now, I had a family member discuss with me regarding a documentary that's supposedly about racism in America. And, I don't know if you've seen this new movie that's out regarding racism in America, but the fact is that this movie is really grinding an axe. This movie is designed to divide and create white guilt and try to create a very dishonest dialogue. The fact of the matter is they're not showing how the Communist Party and the communist infiltration in America has single-handedly decimated the black families. If you understand, even though Hoover was a Republican, he was actually a Democrat. He was a loyalist to Wilson. He wrote Wilson's biography. He only picked the Republican Party because it was basically a rhino, and that was because he knew that he could get elected on the heels of Calvin Coolidge, that there was no way a Democrat would be elected. And then all of a sudden, he got beat out by FDR because FDR gamed his game better than he did. And it was the selling of the entitlement state. You have to remember that the stock market crashed on Hoover. Hoover had the first plan of bailing out the economy under Harding. It was his idea. He went to Harding and said, hey, we've got this depression, actually, and it wasn't a recession. It was a hardcore depression that occurred, I think it was 1919, 1920. It was the first depression that we'd hit in the new era. And what he wanted to do was he wanted to use the Treasury to throw money out to stimulate the economy. That was the premise that the Federal Reserve wanted to move forward. And he was a monkey for the Federal Reserve. They were pulling his strings, or they were the organ grinder, and he was dancing their tune. Well, when he became president, he had the great opportunity because all of a sudden another depression came along. I'm here to tell you that there had to have been some orchestration. If you look at the facts and the details, none of the people that were heavily invested, such as the Kennedys and so forth, I mean, they weren't hurt. They actually pulled out of the market just in time. Is that just a coincidence? And what Hoover was able to do was he was actually able to sustain and prolong the recovery by throwing money out. Well, under Hoover's watch, he also started instituting the projects. Under Hoover's watch was the beginning of the Negro Project that was embraced by FDR as well. And that was setting up Planned Parenthood or abortion clinics in black communities. It was an evil decimation of the black families, and it all started to begin underneath the Democratic Party, even though Hoover was a Republican at the time. We've got a hard break. I will be back to finish this thought and a little bit more for you. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
All right. So let me just finish this. This documentary is disingenuous at best because it only provides, and they try to make it seem like there's a problem with racism on both sides. They kind of honestly, you can't deny the fact that the Democratic Party created the Ku Klux Klan and so forth, but they do not point the finger clearly at the communists within the Democratic Party that started and went down this path of eugenics, as well as went down this path of the enslavement to the state, and how they, during the Johnson's administration, put it on steroids. And one of the best books that you can get is probably Thomas Sowell's, I believe it's Intellectuals in Society, where he actually goes into some of the facts regarding unwanted pregnancies and what ended up happening with the black communities when they started rewarding unwed mothers or single mothers and created a perversion of the American family. Thomas Sowell points out that the black families in America were probably the most conservative as well as the, you know, family oriented and so forth. and they targeted the blacks to do exactly that, to decimate them and to create all of these problems. And so if you want to understand the truth, you can't go to these documentaries, because these documentaries are designed to give you a very biased look. And if you understand those who are driving this, they're dividers. These are not people that are out to solve any problems. They are literally out to continue the problems of division. What happens if all of a sudden we start uniting? Well, there's a lot of money that doesn't go into these grievance industries. They become irrelevant. All of these racist organizations, regardless of whether it's a white racist, black racist, Hispanic, if we start uniting on principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty and supporting, let's just call it a transparent people or a transparent society, because I don't believe it's about race. I do believe it's about culture. I believe it's about American culture, that culture that is founded on individual liberty and individual sovereignty, not on what's in it for us. How do we get a handout? Because by creating these voter blocks based on demographics, whether they be sexual orientation, whether they be race, whether they be gender, it doesn't matter. Those are division-based, factions or parties or voter blocks, whatever. And they are the demise of our constitutional republic. That's why I keep on, poking people in the eye. When you look at the Republican Party, it shouldn't have any, it shouldn't allow all of these small little tents inside of it, like the Young Republicans or the Women's Republicans or the Black Republicans. Those are sub-factions that are out to serve a very specific purpose. We need to be unified in promoting individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and not promoting what's best for one gender, one culture, one demographic group, period. Okay, so let me move forward, because I do want to get into the militia, and I somehow am running out of time. I did want to make a real quick note, because there was a ruling in the past week that a federal judge has ruled that the male-only military draft is unconstitutional. So because they have forced equality for all, that means that your daughters are now going to have to register for the draft just like your sons do. And to me, that is a scourge on our society. But that's just me. I will also say that, and I've gone down this path before, that Trump has every right. When people start looking at what is in a national emergency and what is the constitutional requirement of protecting our borders, when we have lawmakers and we have states that are undermining the Constitution in not seeking to defend our borders and our immigration system and allowing porous borders, then we actually have a crisis. And we have a crisis because the enemy is within. And I know that there's a bipartisan group of supposedly almost 60 senior national security officials, and these are all deep state operatives. And they're saying that there's no factual basis for Trump to proclaim a national emergency. I am telling you that if we have a one caravan after another trying to come in, and we've got coyotes that are constantly bringing people in, we do have a problem. We literally have a problem, and that the states are responsible for supporting the fighting this invasion. That is a part of Article 4, Section 4, that we have in the guarantee clause, that they guarantee to protect us from an invasion. I'll put it in this perspective. If the framers were alive today and they were confronted with this thought that there would be caravans of people coming to come here and demand citizenship, would they be willing to say, yes, we would want that, because they would understand that by these people coming in and not going through the assimilation process and not going through the process and the amnesty concept, they wouldn't have had any part of it. They would have wanted to make sure that they weren't going to allow the undermining of our culture, because that's what's going to happen. Our culture will be undermined, and the concept and that culture, again, being individual liberty. We've got it. You hear it from all sorts of states that when California starts actually migrating, the Texans are complaining because they're making Texas into California, because those people bring their ideologies and they say, well, we want, you know, we love it here in Texas, but we want it like California. And then they go and destroy the culture of that state. They're doing that to Idaho. They've done it to Washington. They, wherever the Californians or the liberals, when they do this mass exodus, they always go in and they infiltrate, and then they undermine by trying to create laws in changing the culture of the state. What is happening is we are having these caravans. How many millions of illegals do we have in America? The best guess, probably 20 to 30 million. And I'm telling you that that is a hit on our culture. Many of them are not assimilating. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't hear, there's so many people that are employed today that only speak Spanish. And I think it was a Taco Bell in Florida where a woman refused to take a woman who spoke English's order. Well, supposedly that person got fired. But those things are happening, and you can go into establishments today in America and not be able to buy anything because they are, you know, anti-English, they won't speak English, and they don't want to serve you. And that would be this concept of violating your civil rights, but we had a requirement for states to come into the union. They had to be one Christian, and they also had to speak English and so forth. I mean, we need to get back to those roots and going back to this whole concept that the framers would not allow this. The reason that that was put in there to keep from an invasion was to stop from foreign forces or foreign individuals coming to undermine our culture and our society. So period. What these men and what these supposedly these former senior national security officials, whether it be Madeleine Albright, Chuck Hagel, or whoever, they're all a part of the deep state, and they're all actors in trying to undermine our constitutional republic. Now, I want to blaze forward, so what we don't get covered today, we'll probably cover tomorrow, and we'll cover this week. We want to get through this martial law, and we want to get through the militia. So one of the things I did, as I told you last week when I started this, how many times the militia was mentioned, now I'm going to tell you how often they talked about martial law, because they understood the ramifications of martial law. And they tied, especially in the Virginia ratification debates, they tied martial law to the deployment of the militia, that the government has no business calling for martial law if there's no need for the militia to be out. And so in Virginia, as I told you last week, they talked about the militia 268 times, and they only mentioned martial law 14. In Massachusetts, they talked about the militia 3 times, and they didn't mention martial law. In Pennsylvania, it was 14 times that they talked about the militia, and only once did they mention martial law. In North Carolina, 17 times they talked about the militia, and 3 times they discussed martial law. South Carolina, once. They talked about the militia only once. And you got to remember, South Carolina was the one that dragged their heels in joining the union. North Carolina just had some problems. They were a little late. I think they actually ratified before the federal government really formed, but or actually before the Bill of Rights and so forth. But anyway, New York also talked about the militia 12 times, and they didn't talk about martial law once. And so, with that, we're at a hard break, and when we come back, I'm going to be sharing a conversation in the Virginia ratification debates back and forth between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists as they were explaining the use of the militia. And so we'll be right back after a couple promos. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so we start off with Madison on June 6th, 1788, and he says this, "But the honorable member sees great danger in the provision concerning the militia. This I conceive to be an additional security to our liberty without diminishing the power of the states in any considerable degree. It appears to me so highly expedient that I should imagine it would have found advocates even in the warmest friends of the present system." In other words, those anti-federalists who are clinging on to the Articles of Confederation. He goes on and says, "The authority of training the militia and appointing the officers is reserved to the states. Congress ought to have the power to establish a uniform discipline throughout the states and to provide for the execution of the laws, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions." Just like we have today, my friends, and that's what the militia should be dealing with, is these invasions. And as a matter of fact, the militia around the states of California and any state that's allowing illegal aliens to run free, the militia should actually be on the border and arresting any of the illegal aliens and deporting them as they come into their state. That's the whole point of the militia. Anyway, these are the only cases wherein they can interfere with the militia, and the obvious necessity of their having power over them in these cases must convince any reflecting mind. Without uniformity of discipline, military bodies would be incapable of action. Without a general controlling power to call forth the strength of the Union to repel invasions, the country might be overrun and conquered by foreign enemies. Without such a power to suppress insurrections, our liberties might be destroyed by domestic faction and domestic tyranny be established.
And so, as you can see, they're already talking about tyranny and using force and so forth from domestic insurrections and so forth. Even though that talked about the Civil War, we are going through a civil war, my friends. We have an ideological opposition to the Constitution, and we're allowing these people to actually become public servants and passing laws that are undermining our Constitution. They've been doing it for well over a century because people have been ignoring the Constitution and ignoring Section 3 of the 14th Amendment in keeping these people from being public servants. Mr. Westmoreland, or Mr. Lee of Westmoreland, I'm sorry, on June 9th stated this: "I cannot understand the implication of the honorable gentleman that because Congress may arm the militia, the states cannot do it, nor do I understand the reverse of the proposition. The states are, by no part of the plan before you, precluded from arming and disciplining the militia. Should Congress neglect it? In the course of Saturday and some previous harangues from the terms of which some of the northern states were spoken of, one would have thought that the love of an American was in some degree criminal, as being incompatible with a popular degree of affection for a Virginian. The people of America, sir, are one people. I love the people of the North, not because they have adopted the Constitution, but because I fought with them as my countrymen. And because I consider them as such, does it follow from hence that I have forgotten my attachment to my native state? In all local matters, I shall be a Virginian. In those of general nature, I shall not forget that I am an American." Now, Governor Randolph pipes in on June 10th, the next day, and says, "After construction, he gives is that it is exclusively in the power of Congress to arm the militia, and that the states could not do it if Congress thought proper to neglect it. I am astonished how this idea could entertain into the gentleman's mind, whose acuteness no man doubts, how can this be fairly deduced from the following clause?" And he reads it: "To provide for the organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for the governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress." He complains much of implication, but in this case, has he made use of it himself? For his construction of this clause cannot possibly be supported without it. It is clear and self-evident that the pretended danger cannot result from the clause. Should Congress neglect to arm the discipline or to arm or discipline the militia, the states are fully possessed of the power of doing it, for they are restrained from it by no part of the Constitution. Now, let me just point out one thing. Even though the states could actually arm, train, and do those things, the one problem that they would have is the ability of having a uniform standard of discipline. The general government, Congress, would need to establish what those standards are. Now, they did actually establish those standards, but they have since actually just ignored the training, the standards, and so forth. And so this next passage, and I've got a little over 4 minutes, so let's see how far I can get through this dialogue, because this is June 11th, and then we'll get it. Actually, the exchanges will occur on June 14th, and we'll go through a lot of different comments. But this is Mr. Madison, and he says, "Let us suppose for a moment that one of those powers which may be unfriendly to us should take advantage of our weakness." In other words, a foreign enemy, such as a weakness on the border, which they would be more ready to do when they know the want of this resource in our government. Suppose it should attack us. What forces could we oppose it? Could we find safety in such forces as we could call out? Could we call forth a sufficient number, either by droughts or by draft, he meant, or any other way to repel a powerful enemy? The inability of the government to raise and support regular troops would compel us, because he's telling us, and it's clear in the Constitution, that the government does not have the ability to actually have standing armies. That's why they mandated that the funding can only go no more than 2 years for the army, period. Not the military, because the Navy has a concurrent funding, because that's actually in the Constitution to have a standing Navy, but not a standing Army. And so the inability of the government to raise and support regular troops would compel us to depend on militia. It would be then necessary to give this power to the government or run the risk of national annihilation. It is my firm belief that if a hostile attack were made this moment on the United States, it would flash conviction on the minds of the citizens of the United States of the necessity of vesting government with this power, which alone can enable it to protect the community. Consider the number of militia officers, the number of justices of the peace, the number of members of the legislatures, and all the various officers for districts, towns, corporations, all intermixing with and residing among the people at large. While this part of the community retained their affection to the state's governments, I conceive the fact will be that the state governments and not the general governments will preponderate. It cannot be contradicted that they have more extensive means of influence. And there's no doubt, if you really start looking at the difference in ideologies between the leftist, the communist, they love the centralized power. They hate the state. They hate the republic. Those who love liberty and understand a limited government love the state, states' rights, and so forth. So if you can understand, we have a ideological civil war going on. Now, let's start with Mr. Clay on the 14th, and I'll get through him and Madison with the time I've got. Why the Congress were to have the power to provide for calling forth a militia to put the laws of the Union into execution. So he's asking, why do they have this power? And Madison says, suppose this definition is legally binding. Suppose the reason for this power was to be so obvious that they would occur the most gentlemen. If resistance could be made to the execution of the laws, he said, it ought to be overcome. This could be done only in two ways, either by regular forces or by the people being the militia. By one or the other, it must unquestionably be done. If insurrection should arise or invasion should take place, the people ought unquestionably to be employed to suppress and repel them rather than a standing army. The best way to do these things was to put the militia on a good and sure footing and enable the government to use their services when necessary. It's very clear that everything that was within the Constitution was to be relied, as far as our internal defense, on the militia. We got to recover and restore the militia in the several states. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.